accession number 19815, reel 3.
Henry Foster, reel 3.
Up to Palace, up to Iraq. Now, there was at that time there was no road up to Iraq, and we followed the pipeline, an oil pipeline. And we did so many miles a day. There was reinforcement camps at various intervals, and we travelled between these reinforcement camps during the day, and then we were fed and that watered, and we slept at these reinforcement camps and moved on the following day. And we eventually finished up in Baghdad. This would be October 1942. Now in Baghdad we went to a tent camp called Lancer Camp, and from there we did internal security duties at various places, because even in those days the Iraqis were anti-British. And there'd been the Germans were hoping to get the Iraqis on their side, but it was forestalled.
Could you detect any anti-British feeling?
Oh yes, there was a lot of anti-British feeling. They didn't like us. They stole everything we had if given the opportunity, you know. We'd barbed wire and gun positions around our camps. They just assassinated their own king, King Faisal, and there was a boy king on the throne. It was only a boy. He was a Faisal, King Faisal. He was only a boy at the time. Anyway, we did internal security duties for a time, and we did manoeuvres and training, still desert training, and we expected to go back up the Western Desert.
What anti-British feeling did you personally come across?
Well, the way they treated us, the locals in Baghdad, we were allowed to go into Baghdad town itself at certain times, and the way we were treated, all they were after us for was money. They wanted our money, and trucks. They used to take us down in trucks, and we had to park our trucks and put a guard on the trucks, because they jack them up and take the wheels off and take the engine out if you see. But they were definitely anti-British. We stayed there till, we had Christmas there, 1942. We spent Christmas in Baghdad. That was the only time I ever played cricket. The whole time I was in the army, we had a cricket match. Might I say now, I ought to have said this earlier, from joining the Middle East and joining the regiment, and for the rest of my service abroad, we never were in barracks, we never had a bed, we always slept on the floor or in a tent or under the stars. It was entirely different from your training in England. I should have said that earlier. Anyway, in Baghdad we did training with the Iraqi army, as I said, and we did internal security. We were on detachments. I was in the carrier platoon then, and we were on detachments. We were away from the battalion for quite a number of weeks on detachment at a place called Fallujah Bridge. which was a bridge over the river Euphrates.
Did you ever come across any disturbances in Iraq?
No, I can't say as I came across any disturbances, but at this Fallujah bridge, it was an iron bridge over the Euphrates. We had to search the Arabs as they came across with their donkeys and their loads. Very little transport, motor transport. But we had to search these for, you know, weapons and things like that. And now eventually, towards, I think it had been March 1943, we left Baghdad and went by rail to Basra, the top of the Persian Gulf, where we joined a ship called the Empire Trooper. It had been a German ship that had been captured. And the West Yorks and the Royal West Kents, they were in one of the other brigades, Royal West Kents. We embarked on the Empire Trooper at Basra. Once again, we didn't know where we were going. Now, we stopped at an oil depot for oiling, and we got something fast round our propeller on this ship, and we were a week tied up at this oil berth at the head of the Persian Gulf. Now, it's very hot there, an open ship and very little water. It were a horrendous week tied up there under the sun before we sailed, and we sailed in a small convoy and finished up at Bombay in India. We didn't stop at Bombay, we were immediately entrained and we travelled across India. It took us about 7 days on a train. We finished up at Ranchi in Bihar State, which is east of Calcutta, west of Calcutta. And we went to an area called Chad, which was maybe 100 miles from Ranchi. Now, I mean, Bihar State in India, it's a bigger place than what England is, you know, the size of it. And we went to this place called Chad. Well, when we got there, all there were miles of open paddy fields and hills and slightly wooded. There was nothing. There wasn't even a tent or a building. Nothing. And we built our own camp in this area, along with the rest of the division. All the rest of the division and what was left of the division had now come and, you know, joined it.
You built a camp?
We built a camp. We put tents up. I won't say we'd no entertainment. There was nowhere to go. They did get Indian contractors in to supply us with tea and cakes and buns and sort of a canteen. And we had there what they call the Indian charwala. He used to come around with his urn, you know, and his hot tea. And that also, we had a nappy walla. He'd come around and shave you as you laid in your bed on the morning. Those were the few comforts we had. We're still in tents, no beds, nothing, just slept on the floor. Now, from there, we did our training, a bit of jungle training. And, we started jungle training. And eventually, we got a fortnight's leave in Calcutta. We went in batches to Calcutta. This was in June, July 1943. At the same time in Calcutta, in India, there was a famine in India at the same time. And in Calcutta, there was thousands of people that were laid on the pavements dying through lack of food while we were on leave. And the only part of Calcutta we were allowed was the main street, Chowringhi. Everything else was out of bounds. But there was the cinemas and bars and, you know, restaurants. And we all got in fortnight's leave there in batches. And then we went back to this place called Chad, and we moved about and did jungle training until November 1943, and then we were on the move again.
What kind of training was it?
Well, jungle training, normal army training, but learning a bit of woodcraft. You know, they did tell you bits of things, how to light a fire without making smoke, where to get the wood from that would be dry, and you found it on the trees. You didn't find it on the ground. You looked for a dead branch on a tree, and that's where you found the driest wood. And we took, we learnt about water, what we had to do for drinking water. It was supposed to be, we were supposed to have water tablets and things like that. When you filled your bottle out of the river, you were supposed to put these tablets in to clean it. We went on anti-malarial drill. We took mepoquin tablets every night. And when I say went to parade, and it was an officer that gave you your mepoquin tablets, that was anti-malarial. We started doing this while we were training, you see. Lots of people, it turned them yellow, these anti-malarial. It was called mepoquin. Quinine was in very short supply. So this was training, but only, it was army ordinary training, infantry training, but more walking than, we didn't do a lot of riding, it was all walking. We walked miles, you know, up hills, down dales. Eventually we left there by train. I remember we went through Calcutta. We actually stopped in Calcutta station and we made a meal in Calcutta station. And we went across what is now Bangladesh by train. And we finished up at Chittagong, which was at the head of the Bay of Bengal. There's a map there if you want to look.
I know where it is.
Uh-huh. We finished up, that's where the railway finished, at Chittagong. And from there, we went south. And we finished up on the Arakan in Burma, round about Cox's Bazaar and a place called Bawley Bazaar. And from there, the whole division moved there, or the 5th Indian Division. And from there, we mounted an offensive against the Japanese, with considerable success. We took Mong Dor, which was a small rice port on the Teknaf River. And we actually, Christmas 1943, we had on the Teknaf Peninsula, which was there.
What do you remember about that offensive and the capture of Mong Dor? Has it affected you?
Well, it didn't affect me very little. I mean, I don't think it affected most of us because the few of us that were left of coming back, going right back to the Western Desert, 200, I mean, we'd got used to the way of life. It was a way of life then, you know. We didn't think about tomorrow. We didn't think about what had gone on. We talked about what had gone on. I mean, that was general. What we talked about, somebody's name had come up. Oh, do you remember so and so? You know, oh, he got done at so and so. He got, you see. But it was just a way of life. We carried on. I remember taking a newspaper reporter to Mong Dor after we'd captured it. Me and a chap called Mitchell, we took him in our Bren Gun carrier. And we took him to Mong Dor for him to take a few pictures. I can't ever remember his name. And it actually took us a lot longer than what that was expected to take him and fetch him back, because we got at one place we got cut off by the tide. In the Mong Dor area, there were a lot of watercourses, and there were tidal and ditches and that sort of thing, and you could only get across them when the tide was out, if you understand me. Anyway,
and were you sending the carrier patrol?
Yes, we were the only battalion that took carriers up to the Arakan. Now, we had considerable success, as I say, in the Mong Dor area, and the carrier patrol. We were doing patrols down the coast. You actually couldn't see the sea. But we were near the coast because it was a bad coastline. There weren't such a thing as beaches. There was mud flats and swamps. And mangrove swamps, yes. And we actually never got really to the coast. We were just inland. On the cultivated area, large rice growing area, you see. And the Mayo Range ran to our left. It was a range of hills, jungle covered, bamboo covered, which were occupied by the Japanese. All the time we were on this coastal area, they could see every move we made. Now, as I say, we had considerable success. And the carrier platoon, we used to do patrols down a track as far as ever we could till there was a big tidal chong, and that was as far as we could get. We couldn't get anything because it wasn't bridged, and with no boats to get across it. Patrols did go across in country boats, you know, dugout canoe thing types, but with the carriers we couldn't. We used to go patrol that area, and in a way, as I look at it now, we hoped that the Japanese would attack us on these patrols, because we were a very strong platoon. We were 14 carriers and with 14 Bren guns, if you understand me. A Bren gun between three men. See, we were very strong. And as I see it now, we hoped we were, that we would be, or the battalion commander hoped we would be attacked, you see, on the level ground. But we never were. Now, we were never told what we were actually, as objective was there. As I've told you before, we were never told very little. We were never told what our objective was. But as you read history, our objective was that from Mung Dor, years ago, a man had built a road over the Mayo Range, and he was actually going to build a railway from Mung Dor, which was a small rice port, over the Mayo Range into the next valley, which was the Kalapanzi Valley, to a place called Buthidong on the Kalapanzi River, where the rice was collected. Now, originally it had been collected by boat and ferried down the Kalapanzi River and then up the coast to Mung Dor, where it was loaded into bigger ships to... But this chap was going to build a railway. But he actually built the road, but he never finished the railway. And it went over the Mayo Range. And there were two tunnels on the Mayo Range. And this is where the Japanese built their main defensive positions, which was on the Mayo Range and these two tunnels. And they could see on the western side where the 5th Indian Div were, and on the eastern side in the Kalapanzi Valley where the 7th Indian Div were operating at the same time. Now, when you read history, the objective was to capture, to secure this road to the Kalapanzi River, and then build a Bailey Bridge over the Kalapanzi River to go to the other side and to get down to two ports that were farther down where there was an aerodrome.
Don't worry about that.
Again?
Don't worry about that.
No. But that was the objective anyway. You only find that out by reading after.
Just stick to your own personal experiences,
yes,
then.
Now, from, as I say, after some success, we moved quickly and we went by a track which had been made into a road over the Mayo Range. We went over the Mayo Range into 7 Div's admin area. Now, whether it was coincidence or not, or just luck, the Japanese put in a counterattack. But they did a big hook round the 7 Div, which was in the Kalapanzi Valley. They did a big hook round behind them and round behind us in 5 Div. At the same time as 9 Brigade were moving over the Nokidok Pass, as we called it, which was, had been just a track and had been bulldozed into a track to take tanks and trucks. We moved over there, and the day we moved it rained. Really, and a dirt track bulldozed. It was a treacherous journey for everybody. And we actually arrived in 7 Div's admin area at the same time as the Japanese put in this big counterattack, this hook, and actually cut us off from our main supply routes to Chittagong. They cut 7 div and 5 div. Now we arrived in 7 div's admin area, the West Yorks. And in the 7 div's admin area, there was only admin troops, a lot of Indians, which they were more or less labourers, they weren't armed. They did the donkey work, you know. There were the petrol dumps, the ammunition dumps, the food dumps. The tanks were leaguered. They got some tanks over there, carbineers. They were leaguered up there. And 7 div's forward troops, which were 3 brigades that spread over miles of jungle, they were told to stay where they were, that hold the ground, even though we were now surrounded by the Japanese. But the Japanese wanted their admin area, they wanted what supplies were in, the transport that was in, and that's where we put up the defence of the admin box, the West Yorks and the Carbineers. And I think for 23 days we were surrounded, we were attacked, we were bombed, we were shelled. The two tunnels I told you about, they had a big gun, and the Japanese, in one of these tunnels, and they used to run it out and fire a few shells at the admin box and then run it back. And they'd been up there nearly 2 years, and the Japanese, you see, they knew every inch. Every shell they fired, they either hit the ammunition dump, or they hit the petrol dump, or they hit the hospital. They knew exactly where they were. And we got used to this gun. We used to, you might be sat on your top of your trench, because everybody were digging, you see. You were sat on top of your trench, and you'd hear it. You'd hear this gun hit a fire. And we used to sit there, because it was about 12 or 13 mile it was firing with this gun. We could hear it, boom, and we used to sit there and we used to say, it'll be here any minute, get down now, you know. And it used to come over, did the shell, and as I say, if it were either the ammunition dump, and it set fire to the scrub on a little place called Ammunition Hill, where all the ammunition was stored. It was Ammunition Hill. And it set fire to the underbrush, and of course it set fire to the shells and the things like that. Or it hit the petrol dump. Now the Japanese took all the high ground, and as I told you before, on the other side, when we were on the other side, they could see everything we did. Now we'd organised the defence now, and we organised the defence in the admin box on just on three sides. We left one side open, which was level ground. One side was level ground. The other three sides were all surrounded by hills. And when I say hills, from the paddy they went, you know, I have a map there showing 50-foot contours, you know, very close together. They were very, very steep. And the Japanese at various times occupied all these features, and we were down in the bottom. And the West Yorks